Welcome to the GenCast Network. Created every Thursday, GenCasts feature the latest biotech news of the week, plus compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. In this week's GenCast, Gen's Editor-in-Chief John Sterling interviews Dr. James Inglese of the NIH Chemical Genomics Center on ultra-high-put screening and chemistry technologies. But first, the news of the week with Rob Rees.
This is Rob Rees for Gen. As announced by Genzyme Chairman and Chief Executive Officer Henri A. Termeer, during this week's annual meeting of the Biotechnology Industry Organization in Chicago, Genzyme has established a program to participate in efforts to discover and advance novel treatments for neglected diseases affecting the developing world. According to Termeer, the company's new Humanitarian Assistance for Neglected Diseases initiative will serve as a vehicle to identify, evaluate, and manage scientific projects and partnerships focused on diseases that collectively affect hundreds of millions of people. These could include malaria, tuberculosis, sleeping sickness, and other diseases. Termeer notes that Genzyme will not seek to profit from the commercialization of any products it helps to develop, instead granting all commercial and intellectual property rights in neglected disease areas to nonprofit partners. The U.S. Department of Energy's Brookhaven National Laboratory and the Mount Sinai School of Medicine have signed an agreement to establish a joint center for translational biomedical imaging. Building on earlier collaborations using radioactively tagged molecules and brain imaging techniques to investigate the biological basis of ADHD and substance abuse, organization representatives suggest that this formalized agreement will foster more robust research collaborations investigating these and other conditions, including Alzheimer's disease and depression. Fritz Hein, Brookhaven Lab's new Associate Laboratory Director for Life Sciences, says the agreement draws on the complementary strengths of the institutions. Quincy Bioscience announced that their proprietary technology, consisting of a specific jellyfish protein, has displayed potent neuroprotectant activity in their laboratory studies. During this week's bio meeting, it was noted that the company has been researching the jellyfish protein for the past 10 years and has recently demonstrated a significant ability to keep brain cells alive longer in controlled tests when an ischemic event is administered. Laboratory tests show a 28 to 45% improvement in cellular protection from death in their rodent model studied. The specific area of the brain studied was the hippocampus, a region that is responsible for short-term memory formation. According to primary investigator Dr. James Moyer Jr. of the University of Wisconsin at Milwaukee, investigating the hippocampus is crucial to understanding the molecule's impact on Alzheimer's. A single dose of adult donor stem cells given to animals that have neurological damage similar to that experienced by adults with a stroke or newborns with cerebral palsy can significantly enhance recovery from these types of injuries. This, according to Dr. Cesario V. Borlangen, neuroscientist at the Medical College of Georgia and the Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Augusta. The findings were presented during the 58th annual meeting of the American Academy of Neurology in San Diego. In humans, it is hoped the findings will translate to incremental but important recovery advances, said Dr. David Hess, adult stroke specialist and chair of the Medical College of Georgia Department of Neurology and a study co-author. According to Hess, stroke is the single largest cause of disability among adults in the U.S. He hopes stem cell therapy, along with aggressive physical therapy, will one day be able to work synergistically to reduce that disability. Illumina representatives recently announced that the company has signed a genotyping services agreement to support prostate cancer researchers funded by Cancer Research UK, the world's leading independent charity dedicated to cancer research. The aim of the work is to investigate the role of common genetic variation in the etiology of prostate cancer, which is believed to be the most common cancer among men and a leading cause of cancer-related death among men. From the work, it is hoped that it will be possible in the future to design and validate biomarkers associated with prostate cancer susceptibility and disease progression, as well as to facilitate development of improved therapeutic approaches. This is the second large-scale genotyping agreement signed between the two organizations in the last 6 months. Its structure closely follows a November 2005 agreement under which Illumina is genotyping colorectal cancer samples and controls for Cancer Research UK. This is Rob Rees for Gen.
In-depth coverage of the news of the week can be found on www.genengnews.com. Just click on the Sticky Ends Online link. And now John Sterling interviews Dr. James Inglese of the NIH Chemical Genomics Center on ultra-high-put screening and chemistry technologies.
Dr. Jim Inglese is deputy director at the NIH Chemical Genomics Center. He is also editor-in-chief of Assay and Drug Development Technologies, a peer-reviewed journal published by Marianne Liebert, Inc. His research interest is focused on the discovery and development of small molecule biomodulators, which are compounds capable of affecting biological function in a defined in vitro setting. Dr. Inglese, what's the mission of the Chemical Genomics Center, and can you tell us something about the role you play at the center?
Let me tell you a little bit about what the center is, and then I'll tell you what it's charged with. The center is what we consider an ultra-high-throughput screening and chemistry center, which discovers chemical probes of gene and cellular function, and we want to do this across the genome. And in addition, we'd like to develop new paradigms for screening that enable chemical genomics and downstream drug development. And as an example, we have developed a process called quantitative high-throughput screening, which allows us to effectively characterize the biological activity of large chemical libraries. And so our mission and our charge is to make this capacity broadly available to scientists in the academic community and elsewhere. As for my role, the role has been and continues to be to aid the director of the center, Chris Austin, in the establishment of the NCGC by developing a comprehensive strategy for high-capacity and efficient molecular probe discovery and development. And this includes equipping the center with the necessary technologies, the expertise to carry out the mission, as well as running the day-to-day operations of the center, and very importantly, working with the NIH and what we call the extramural or outside scientific community to facilitate the uptake of assays for our center for screening and probe development.
Now, the center has been, I'm going to change a little question here based on just what you said. The center's been up and running for how many years now?
So the official announcement was June 9th of 2004, but we didn't move into our lab space until February of last year. So, we've had lab space now for a little over a year. So we've actually been, conducting experiments for a little over a year now.
Now, in some of these experiments you've been conducting, even though it's a little bit over a year, has anything novel, anything new really come out of these that has been so interesting that you folks have actually already written up?
Well, as I mentioned, we actually implemented a paradigm, what we call quantitative high-throughput screening. So that is a very interesting a twist on high-throughput screening, where we actually have built the capacity to do full titration screens of every compound in the collection. The collection right now is about 70,000 compounds and growing. We expect to be able to do this on hundreds of thousands of compounds. So from a technological point of view, we feel we've made a very important improvement in the screening process. So that's one example, and the data from that process has been put into PubChem, which is the database that we use to report our data to the public. So we've got about 6 to 7 assays that have been screened so far.
Okay. Now it's been noted that of the approximately 25,000 human genes unearthed by genomic sequencing, those capable of modulating human disease remain relatively unknown. So as a result, identifying proteins involved in diseases without the insights obtained from years of genomic and biomedical research, now that would seem like a daunting task. What are you and your team trying to do to overcome these obstacles?
Okay, so that goes precisely to my previous response, and that's why the development of new technology or the improvement of current technologies to scale to the size of the genome in terms of the number of targets that remain untapped is so important. So this process I described to you is an efficient and comprehensive means to get quickly at the identity of biological activity from large chemical libraries. And it's those chemical activities that we believe will be very useful as the precursors to probe substances or compounds that will help scientists unravel and understand biological processes. So we're really trying to catalyze the discovery and development of basic chemical tools used as probes for understanding biology. These types of probes have been around in the past, but we need more of them, and we need them quicker than before in order for us to make the kind of use of them that we're going to need.
I see. Now, in reading over your research, in addition to that new technique that you mentioned, your team talks about novel assay technologies and small molecule discovery processes. Can you describe what are some of the other kinds of assays you're working on, and what kind of small molecules are you working with or looking for, are you focusing on?
Sure. Let me try to explain that maybe in the context of a new enabling technology that we're implementing, and then some of the types of assays that we're combining with that. So we're interfacing with our quantitative high throughput process a laser scanning microplate cytometer, which is really it's a device that's a hybrid between a microscope-based high content imager and a flow cytometer. But it's capable of very rapidly measuring changes in cellular phenotype in 1536 well plates. We have to work in these plates with high density plates with very small volumes in order to accommodate the massive amount of samples we screen. So that technology has been useful in a couple of assays that are designed to report on the ability of small molecules to modulate aberrant splicing of mRNA by reversing the phenotype of the splicing defect. So, you know, such errors in splicing are the molecular basis for a range of rare genetic disorders. Some of note are beta thalassemia, a rare blood disorder, and Hutchinson-Gilford progeria syndrome, which is a premature aging disease. And we have some cellular assays that look at the genetic defect, which is the underlying basis of these disorders, and we're trying to find small molecules that can interact with the spliceosome and change the splicing pattern of these of the proteins involved in this disorder, in these disorders, for example.
I see. Okay, now finally, and you mentioned something previously about where you'd like to see some improvement. Regarding new tools and advances in technologies, you folks work on a range of these things. Where do you think improvement is still needed in terms of these tools or technologies to help you accelerate the research you and your colleagues are carrying out right now?
Yeah, so John, that's an important question, and basically improvements are needed in every aspect of what we do and with all the technologies we use. And this ranges from the enablement of assays that have the capacity, for example, to mimic complex biological processes such as protein trafficking or neurodegeneration, to the design and synthesis of the chemical libraries that we screen so that they have novel biological activity profiles that can push us into new biological space, as well as new informatics tools and bioinformatics tools to help us analyze this huge amount of data that's going to be pouring out of the center. And I should say our center's not the only one. It's one of 10 centers in what's known as the Molecular Library Screening Center Network, all focused on pretty much the same goal.
Very good. Hey, Jim, well, thank you very, very much for your time.
Thanks a lot, John, for the opportunity. It's really very important for us to get the word out because, again, this is something that's available to everybody, and the more people that know about it, the better.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, be sure to visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus, saying thanks for joining us, and be sure to tune in next Thursday.